from the very beginning of the birth.
I have a little son, and he is so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your queries regarding the upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified progeny. Today in our studio, we have with us our guest speaker, Brother Miqdad. He's an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for accepting the invitation. Well, Brother Miqdad, in our previous sessions, we have been talking about the animation world, the games world, and what kind of worldview they portray and how a parent should be aware about that. You gave us a few examples. I want to ask you, is there any more worldview that's being portrayed, or are there more examples you would like to add?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we've been talking about bringing awareness to parents as well as youth about the dangers of the screen. So screen being animations or video games or cartoons or movies or serials, whatever it is. And we said that the first thing that we need to understand is that we need to be concerned, right? Okay. What we're going to do about this is another discussion. It's a different chapter in this book. But the first thing that we want to do is really understand and be aware that this is something concerning that we need to be aware of, that we cannot by any means leave our children on the screen unsupervised for hours long without knowing what they're getting involved in. And just saying that there's no adult content in it is not sufficient at all. So in the previous show, we talked about how the screen is an education. It's not just pure entertainment. In most of the time, at the very least, we can say in most times, in most circumstances, the screen, so video games or animations or serials, are not pure and just empty entertainment, but rather it's an education. It changes the way we think. It changes our values, our goals, our principles in life.
Yeah.
And so this worldview, how it's changed, we talked about a few examples in the previous show. We talked about Moana Entangled in the theme of girls being free.
Yeah.
We talked about sandbox game like Minecraft.
True.
To give a couple more examples and then move on, the example of how we define or how we understand the importance of success and how to get to success.
All right.
So one of the themes that you find that's portrayed out there that changes our worldview mm-hmm. is this attitude of, or this is this theme that luck is very important and that we don't need as much effort as we need luck in becoming successful.
All right. So it's your fortune that will take you, that will define your destiny.
That's correct.
All right.
So you find that today's culture is kind of governed by this idea that we all want to become a millionaire overnight.
All right.
So the whole worldview out there is effort is good, but we're always chasing this overnight millionaire. That something will just lucky, something will happen out of luck and we'll just get to something. And you find that this then goes into other areas, not just material areas. And you find that, for example, just to give an idea, if you look at all the superheroes that we have out there, right? So Ben 10 and Spider-Man and Superman and what you name all of them, you find that in 90% of the superheroes, if not all of them, their human perfection, or let's say the perfection that they have, is never out of an effort that they've made.
All right.
It's always out of a luck. So whether they found a watch, or they were bitten by a spider, or they came from a random place, or something random and purely fortune happened to them that made them achieve a type of perfection that other human beings don't have.
All right.
And so this is completely opposite to what we say in Islam.
Real life.
Yeah, or in real life as well.
Yeah.
So in Islam, we have this idea that it is efforts that lead you to perfection, right?
All right.
وَلَيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى. Human being doesn't have anything except what he gains through his efforts, through his actions.
Exactly. We'll talk more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Brother Miqdad, and we're discussing about animations, video games, and what kind of effects these screens have for children, or what kind of world view is being portrayed. Yes, Brother Miqdad, you said so far that we are being introduced to the games in which girls have to be free, they have to go against all the norms, all the beliefs, all the ideas and values. And there are games that show you there's no purpose in life, you have to design it yourself. And we also came to the point that you have to wait for luck. Fortune defines your destiny. It's not much of your efforts, which is very opposite to what is being taught in Islam.
So these were three examples that I gave.
Yeah.
So on this last example, if you look at, perhaps somebody might ask, well, what about the Ahlul Bayt, for example? Haven't they received this human perfection from birth? And the answer is yes, but it was based on their efforts as well. It
okay.
is based on the fact that Allah knew that they will perform the best of actions in this world. So even in the case of the Ahlul Bayt, their human perfection that they've achieved, and them being true superheroes, it is not out of luck. It is rather out of their actions that they commit and they perform in this world that leads them to that highest level of human perfection.
True.
Inshallah, you can refer to more on books of Aqaid, but this is the true Islamic worldview, that what human perfection we can achieve, how to become superheroes, how to be successful, is through our effort and not through luck. So this is another example. Another example we can talk about is this idea that everything is material, and
All right.
there is no reality other than material reality.
All right.
So this is a very common thing you find in all, if not most of the things that we interact with on the screen, because the producers of these animations and video games and serials, etc., are from a secular background. They're from
yeah.
a empiristic and modern background, which means that they believe that reality is that which is sensed in with the five senses, and that we have no reality beyond that which is material.
All right.
So just to give an example, in Ice Age, right? Ice Age 3, if I remember correctly, heaven, how is heaven portrayed? Heaven is a world, a material world with material pleasure, right? Take the example of Up, where you find that they, throughout the movie, throughout the animation, they're searching for this heavenly garden, you would call, right?
Okay.
Not only to realize that that wasn't what was important. What was important was what they had in this world.
All right.
So at the end, if you remember the end of the animation, they come back to this world and say, that which we have was very beautiful. That which we had in this world was very important.
All right. Then actually reversing the concept.
Exactly.
That is being taught in Islam. All right. There's more to talk on this, and we'll talk about that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
The Prophet ﷺ said, "No father has granted a gift to his child better than good manners."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm with Brother Miqdad, and we are talking about video games, animations, what kind of effects it have on children, and what is the Islamic worldview. Well, Brother Miqdad, in our previous episodes, you talked about a few things that were changing the mindset of girls. You said that there are a few games that show that girls, the definition of free is being defined as girls must go against the norms, against their parents, against the beliefs that they carry or their parents have, against all the rituals that are existing in their societies, against the values. I want to ask you here, what does Islam say? Does Islam restrict girls?
The answer to that is no. So obviously, the Islamic idea of success for a woman is the same as a success for a man, because success in Islamic terms is not gender limited.
Okay.
So the human perfection that a man can achieve is the same perfection that the woman can achieve. So, and you have examples and role models for that in the Holy Quran as well. So Hazrat Zahra is obviously a pure role model for human perfection that is achieved. She is the same as Amir al-Mu'minin. She is Kuf for Amir al-Mu'minin, Imam Ali alayhi salam, which means that their human perfection is at the highest level that can be achieved.
All right.
The Holy Quran, for example, you have the example of Maryam alayhi salam and the wife of Fir'aun, both of whom are role models for not just women, but believers. In the Holy Quran, the word that is used for them too is that both of them are role models for believers, men and women. Doesn't make a difference.
Doesn't make any difference.
The gender in terms of human perfection has no is not a limitation. However, when it comes to the path towards achieving that perfection, because the world is such that there is differences in these two genders when it comes to the material world. So,
yeah.
Responsibilities at the level of society. Family, etc., are different. Therefore, the path upon which both of these genders have to track on might look different in some ways, and this will lead to laws being also different for men and women.
Exactly.
Especially when it comes to laws that are related to society, just because there's differences between them, but that which they can achieve is the same in terms of that high level of perfection.
Exactly. And also about these two pious ladies, Surah Tahrim says that it's not necessary that a woman to be a role model has to be a wife of a prophet, because Maryam was not wife of any prophet, and Lady Asiya was wife of Pharaoh. So they can be role models as such, like on their own, independently, reaching that highest perfection. Thank you so much, Brother Miqdad, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
The Sideline.
Welcome to The Sideline, where we discuss the latest hot topics of the FIFA World Cup 2022. I'm your host, Hamza Khayoun. Today, we are delving headfirst into the Ukraine-led campaign to disqualify the Islamic Republic of Iran from the World Cup before it even started. We will also look at the merits of boycotting or disqualifying teams from sporting competitions for strictly political reasons. The show will hear from experts on these hotly debated issues, but before that, we have a very special report on a failed campaign to ban the Islamic Republic of Iran from the World Cup 2022.
Ukraine has solidarity, weapons, and cash heaped upon it in Western circles. From Hollywood to the sporting field, famous figures can regularly be found virtue signaling in blue and yellow. In the British Premier League, all 20 teams had their captains appear wearing Ukrainian armbands. Ukraine has even added its name to a bid by Spain and Portugal to host the 2030 World Cup. Is this meant to compensate for their inability to qualify for the competition? Will players be marching into stadiums wearing Ukrainian colours? It seems unlikely, as the Middle East region has a clearer view of events in Ukraine than their European counterparts. The prospective NATO member had led a rancid campaign to disqualify the team of the Islamic Republic from the competition before it had even started. The CEO of the Ukrainian team, Shakhtar Donetsk, has even gone so far as to say the Iranian team should be withdrawn from the competition and replaced with the Ukrainian national team. The bid to deny Iran's right to compete has been led by the Ukrainian Association of Football. However, at the sideline, we wonder if a body as historically corrupt as it is fit to make such assertions. It was found that for 15 years, funding meant for the UAF, then known as the Football Federation of Ukraine, was channeled directly into the British Virgin Islands tax haven bank account of Newport Management. This offshore company was controlled by FFU chairman Hirori Sirkes and received over 380 million euros. Hirori Sirkes is of course part of the anti-Russian, pro-NATO Ukrainian elite who have invited the US colonization of their country. He's known to be close to figures like Israeli-Ukrainian funder of Nazi groups Igor Kolomoisky and former pro-Western president Viktor Yushchenko. Who are you, corrupt elites, to question the legitimacy of the Islamic Republic? Perhaps Ukraine is hurt by its own failure to qualify when it lost to Wales. This was thanks to a humiliating old goal by Ukrainian striker Andrei Yarmolenko. Operation Disqualify Iran failed.
We are joined in the studio by our resident football analyst, Mo Haidar. Mo was a key figure in the development of Arsenal Fan TV, where he was eventually dismissed for his public support for the Palestinian cause. Now he runs his own YouTube channel where he provides cutting-edge analysis and incisive commentary on the latest Arsenal games. We are joined on Skype today by Professor David Miller, the producer and resident expert of Palestine Declassified. David was formerly a professor of sociology at Bristol University and today is a leading scholarly critic of Israel. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. So, David, Russia was successfully banned from this World Cup despite hosting it last time. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So this was back in February when the Russians launched their special military operation. And FIFA declared that Russian national team and indeed other Russian teams would be banned from all competitions, including the World Cup. So this was part of the kind of hysteria that there was at the time, which continues to some extent over the Ukraine question. And it's meant that Russia's been banned from a whole number of different competitions and areas, as well as in football. So it's a more general thing where Russia has been isolated by Western powers.
Mo, can you tell us a little bit about your experience of supporting Palestine on AFTV football?
Well, unfortunately, AFTV was a very organic football fan channel. There were no sort of rules or regulations in terms of what you can, can't do, can and can't wear. So when I go to football games, I tend to wear a badge on my jacket that says Free Palestine. And for many years, that was fine. But then as the channel became bigger and had more scrutiny, people started to take an issue with that badge. And I was told that you're going to have to take the badge off because we want to stay non-political. Right. I respected that. and I crossed out the fact that the badge said free, so it just showed Palestine. And I thought, do you know what? It shows that censorship of Palestine in action. So I was quite happy. But then things took turn for a worse, really, when I was filming for the channel during COVID from home, and I was wearing a hoodie that simply just said Palestine. It just had a badge that said Palestine. And I was told to remove that hoodie, that item of clothing. I reacted quite angrily to that, because what right does anyone have to restrict the clothes that I wear? And what I did, I publicly called out the channel when the hostilities between Israel and Palestine took a turn for the worse, and they didn't like being called out. Today we see Qatar being called out with hard-hitting questions from journalists and fans and footballers about every issue under the sun. But when it came to me asking AFTV a question about why they're trying to suppress any sign of Palestine in their channel, that was the response was to just get me off the channel.
Right. And David, why did they target the Islamic Republic of Iran in this way?
Well, it's about, if you look at the example of Russia and the example of Iran, these are about nations which are either clients of the West or not. The Islamic Republic of Iran is being targeted because it's not seen as a client of the West. It's seen as opposing the West. And of course, it's been targeted by Ukraine specifically because of the apparent role of Iranian Shahed drones. So there's been an attempt to target the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Iranian football team to get them out of the competition by Ukraine, a country where there are, as everybody now knows, active Nazis involved in the military and indeed having a leading role in the military in Ukraine. But nobody says we should be banning Ukraine or stopping Ukraine from participating in competitions. Instead, it's the countries which threaten Western interests which are targeted.
Mo, do you think the same standards will apply to the United States? We know that the next World Cup will be taking place there. Do you feel that people will be taking a similar stance against them as far as imperialism goes?
Clearly, it's a rhetorical question. United States, they seem to be able to do whatever they please, no matter what their foreign policy or what's going on domestically, and they seem to be able to just skirt above scrutiny. The Iraq war started in 2003, an illegal war based on lies, yet there was no question of their involvement in the 2006 World Cup in Germany or their involvement in the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. So do I think that there'll be an equal sort of questioning of America? No, don't make me laugh.
Thank you. And David, what do you make of the information about the Ukraine Football Federation contained in the report?
Well, it's not surprising, I guess. I mean, I've looked a little bit into the Ukrainian oligarchs and the Ukrainian elites and their role in relation to anti-Russian pogroms and behaviour in Ukraine. This guy, Kolomoisky, who is close to the guy who runs the Football Association, really interesting character. As it said in the film there, he has Israeli citizenship as well as Ukrainian citizenship. He's Jewish. He's been involved in all sorts of corruption there. There are outstanding warrants against him in the US by the Department of Justice. He's not allowed neither any of his children or his family to go to the US. And of course, he was involved in funding the Azov Battalion and other Nazi militias in the Ukraine. This is the kind of milieu in which Ukrainian football operates. And so I'm not surprised at all to see the way in which the funds to this company have gone offshore, just like Zelensky's funds went offshore, has been shown in the Panama Papers. This is a nest of corruption, of money laundering, and indeed of support for actual Nazis.
Mo, how do you feel like the tournament has gone so far? Do you feel like there's a strong vibe of cultural imperialism going on in Qatar?
Well, in terms of the tournament so far, there's a football element and then there's a cultural imperialism element as well. In terms of the football element, it's been a great tournament so far. The football never disappoints, and there's been some incredible upsets already, with Saudi Arabia beating Argentina and Japan beating Germany. But the biggest upset has probably been the one that's called from this superior mentality of football fans not being allowed to drink and purchase alcohol at stadiums. And I think that's a really clear sign of this cultural imperialism that's at play here, where clearly it's not in Qatar's culture to do something like that, yet the response to that has not been one of understanding and acceptance. It's been a response of entitlement and what seems like an unspoken view that one culture is superior to another. And that, for me, has been quite obnoxious and off-putting, to be honest with you.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you for joining us on the sideline today. Please stay tuned. We will be back throughout the tournament with more debate and analysis. Until then, goodbye for now.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Brother Muhammad speaking to you from the Youth Station, IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I hope you're all doing well. I am Beta, a medical student, and that's my pleasure to be here in this episode. Always we have some controversial issues here, and today I was walking by the street and I saw a little girl, and maybe she was about 12 years old or something, and she was searching something which was really interesting for me. Oh. Two words that I've never heard up to here, actually.
So you were eavesdropping, yeah?
Yeah. No, I'm not doing that. These two words actually was new to me, and there were Gen Z, and you know, it was like about these topics, Gen Z and Gen X and other types of this sort of thing that, yeah, I wasn't really familiar with. Do you know something about this sort of thing?
Well, the thing with the definition of this,
yeah,
is they're more colloquial than they are. I think it's, well, taking from the internet, it's going to be Generation X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Generation Z, they're essentially those born between 1997 and 2012.
So I'm Generation Z.
Yeah, so we're all Generation Z over
here.
Yeah. And the generation before us are going to be Millennials or Gen Y, who were born between 1981 and 1996. And then the generation before us, which I believe are going to be our parents,
yeah,
1965 to 1980. So these are the people born in between.
Good.
Now, what do you think? I think what about the difference between these and when it comes to their life?
Actually, you know, this question is somewhat complicated because there is a difference, and we call it a generation gap that there exists between these kind of generations. And I think something which is somewhat controversial in this generation is their beliefs, their mindsets. Mm-hmm. And that is so different, you know. When you go, for example, through a Generation Z and Gen Z, it's like, okay, you are in a new world with new, yeah, mindset, and they are so idealistic, and they want freedom.
Yeah, you're born from a computer here, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, one thing which is really, you know, touching among this generation is that they're speedy, you know, because of the, yeah, technology, yeah, and you can, they can find anything by a click or something. They are so speedy and they need this speed. But unfortunately, in the last generation, it's not like that much. And another thing which I want to tell you is about their religious beliefs.
Yeah.
For example, yeah, I'm from the Gen Z, but even sometimes I feel like I'm not from this generation. I feel apart.
What do you mean? Yeah. You're not from Gen Z? That's how you feel?
No. I'm from Gen Z by the numbers and by the age. But sometimes when I go through their beliefs and their speaking chats or something, it's like, okay, I'm feeling apart from you. Why are you like that?
Oh,
you know?
The general vibe of Gen Z. Yeah, I do
exactly
agree with that. You see, with dealing with the youths and stuff, that's how it is. Those who are like your classmates and stuff,
yeah,
the trends that they're being followed, yeah, you end up feeling like that. And I think that is quite natural, because the funnier thing is these persons from Gen Z, right? People,
yeah,
from Gen Z, you will see that they follow stuff from Gen X and Y, but not necessarily all the stuff. But when it comes to religion, we call it outdated. But then whatever is whatever was modern,
we choose it.
Yeah, so whatever was modern during Gen Y, so essentially millennials, it becomes like old for us, like,
yeah,
something really. But then whatever
old-fashioned
is modern for us, it's going to be the same for the coming generation, right? That's quite natural. But is it right or not? That's a very
important
question.
No, it's not. Actually, it's not. You know, because we are somehow in an atmosphere of being in Gen Z. You know, there is a special vibe that you want to be somehow under mode and the fashion.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Always you're going to go some new trends.
So you have this irreligious fashion that is called modern.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you want to, for example, define religion as something, as only humanity, nothing else. All the limitations should be omitted because there are limitations. And these kind of thoughts, which at first maybe they seem somehow attractive, but when you go deeper, you cannot find a special meaning in them. You know, maybe sometimes there is something behind them from the other generation.
You know, what really comes to my mind is religion existed long before these generations, right?
Yeah.
Gen X, Y.
It's a long time.
What happened to Gen Y, essentially, millennials, that the generation after them are seeing religiosity as something of an old fashion, and they have a religious, you know, way of living, and they believe that as something better and newer. What do you think?
So,
because you see, you look at the lost generation, the silent generation, the greater generation, baby boomers, generation X, Y. All of them, they had religion.
Yeah,
even
exactly.
Generation Z, they have a religion.
Exactly.
But like, why is it that now the fashion is to be irreligious?
You know what? I think in every generation, there is a revolution, and there is a religious revolution, I think. There exists a religion in all these generations, but in every generation, that is somehow different, you know?
Uh-huh.
As you know, in every generation, we have two different parts. One part which is so religious, with religious mindsets and some limitations like that, and they are just trying to make everything better for the other parts of the generation. And there is a kind of dark side. I don't like it to call dark side, because nothing is absolute dark or absolute bright.
Yeah, that is right.
But actually, there exists something like, okay, I don't believe in you. And the other part is still okay, telling that, okay, you're somehow outdated. We don't like you or something. And I think there is a conflict here. And
it seems as if the origin of this conflict would be more like their families, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you look at more liberal families, those who don't really care much. Well, that's how I'm looking at it.
Like that,
yeah, they don't really care much of the upbringing. Or for those who have this mentality of, let's say, my child can do whatever they want, right? So they tend to fall aparts more in those families. So the origin, I think, would rather be more like the upbringing of this generation than the previous one. So should we call it the Generation X fault? Because they are our fathers and mothers.
Yeah, it is like that, actually. I think they are playing an important role. I mean, parents in even my religious beliefs, because I'm that kind of person who is always like, okay, I won't follow you until I just am sure about that you are the true person to follow.
Mm-hmm.
So if you agree with me, let's go for a short break, then we're going to come back.
No problem. Yeah.
Stay tuned, dear listeners.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to Youth Station. You are tuned into RRIB English Radio. Sister Bita and I were discussing about a very important topic, actually a very interesting one, the differences between the millennials and Gen Z. And she told us about an encounter she had while she was, you know, outside. She saw something in that, you know, girl's phone. What exactly was it?
She was searching on Google or Chrome or something, some apps like that. It wasn't something bad, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't want to actually, or ear, or eye. What can I tell you?
Speaking about the same search, let me tell you, I think that one of the biggest difference between the millennials and Gen Z is the screen time.
Oh.
The amount of time they spend on their phones. I can remember my grandfather, the phone he would have.
Mm-hmm.
The only time he would touch his phone is only whenever he has a call or a message.
Nice.
Otherwise, you would have more social interactions.
I want to be like that too, but I cannot, you know.
Yeah, it's difficult because you get addicted to it.
It's not about addiction. It's about your need, you know. You have to do that.
You're kind of dependent to it right now. But there is this movement, rather. There is this movement. We're going to come back to the religiosity in just a minute. But there is this movement of this no phone movement, or this, you know, staying away from internet and stuff.
Yeah.
You use the minimum services that your phone can give. For example, the calling and whatnot. And apparently, that is proven to be a lot more
effective,
calming for the brain.
Yeah.
The one of the difficulties we face with Gen Z is that I believe is anxiety. We have this anxiety. We wanna see what's going on.
Yeah.
Every time you see a pop-up on the phone, you have to check it. Even while you're studying. I was in the library this morning, and I was just studying innocently. So all of a sudden, just a message pops up, and it wasn't anything important. It was just some
marketing.
Yeah, marketing for some channel. And then you just open the phone, and you're into something else. Mm-hmm. Half an hour has gone, procrastinated. You realize you've... So getting back to that main point, the generation difference which affects the religiosity of these Gen Zs, I think is also the screen time. Because the information that they're getting before, what would happen is the information,
yeah.
How would you imagine your parents got their information from?
You
their
know,
parents,
books,
right?
Yeah, somehow. Oh, no, their parents, their parents
books,
yeah.
Right? So essentially it was kind of like a limited way of acquiring information, either your parents or books.
So you're telling me that now because we have technology, it is a disaster or it's something good?
With the phones?
Yeah, no, a new way of achieving technology. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's more modern. It's actually very important and good. It's a need of this day. How else are you going to get information now that parents are busy?
But I think it could be a disaster, you know, because when you have more choices, choosing something is more difficult. It is from my own experience.
Yeah, but like if you have less choices, don't you think you're kind of like, you know, limited to those choices?
I do agree with this limitation that you will face when you have less choices. But I think when you have a lot of choices and you don't have any way to just make someone, some choices out of these list and just check the correct ones and you don't know how you should do that, I think this is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think one of the biggest problems that the new generation, Generation Z, is actually facing is somehow losing their identity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That is a very big factor.
And I think one important part of everybody's identity is religion. And, you know, they are tangled to each other, I think. And there is actually a strong connection between these two that when you lose your identity and when you change it, even sometimes I did it myself.
Yeah,
and then I went through the social media. I had another name, another age and something. And I was another person. And this is the feeling of losing yourself because you are making something new. And even you didn't complete whatever you were. And this is a disaster, I think, that there should be some ways out of this.
Rather, I would differ. Why not just take advantage of the technology we have as Gen Zs and not necessarily consider this technology as a disadvantage or a disaster, because there are also good things in it.
Yeah.
I should not say also good things. Rather, there is both good and bad out there, right? It's generally the way the Gen Zs approach this. And I think it all gets back to our education system and our parents and the upbringing of the parents.
Yeah.
So you'd see generally those who are liberal in their, you know, thoughts and their works and their beliefs and stuff, and they don't get any form of religion that was at least preserved by their parents. It's mainly because they've left them.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd agree with me in this as well, because the parents, when they leave you, or if they send you to a school that is essentially, you know, leaving them as well. Like if they send you to a school that is going to essentially feed you those thoughts, and your entire worldview is to essentially find things that that are essentially liberal, that are essentially not religious. But let's say if you're in a religious school or in a religious education system, or you have your parents and they're really sensitive with your upbringing, eventually what happens is you'll be able to get the information. You will be searching the information that is more close to your beliefs.
Yeah, exactly. I do agree with your mindset that just you're telling me that parents' educational system are so important. Dear listeners, go for a short break. Stay tuned. I I think the problem of this generation is that they do not agree with the education system. I do not believe in that. Actually, the fact that educational system is something true, because I think there should be some destructions first for this educational system, and then we have to construct it from the root, I think.
Yeah, reconstruct
it. Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, I completely agree with that.
Because of that, me, myself, I just understood that you have to go for your own beliefs. You have to seek it. You have to have the tendency to go through that. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
sometimes there this tendency to search for the answer of the questions that you have is somehow killed and burned in yourself. And this is the problem, I think. You have to make it alive and revive it again and go to find the answers of all of your questions, you know. And I think this may be somehow really difficult.
Yeah. Dear listeners, Sister Bita and I, we were discussing about Gen Z and the differences that we have with the previous generations and how these differences affect us as human beings, and all the differences, specifically taking a very important look at the religious differences. You're tuned into RRIB English Radio. Have a nice day. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood, and we're focusing on the second sermon of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahj al-Balagha, where he talks about the grounds and the circumstances of the society and the historical, circumstance in which the prophets sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and generally the prophets arrived for mankind. And we say that the actual problem that the people faced was the problem of misguidance, and the problem of misguidance is mostly a spiritual problem, a problem that is related to the way people think, the way they perceive reality, and the way they focus their hearts. And this was the actual problem that Imam Ali alayhi salam says. And all of the other problems that people face in the society were offshoots of this problem. And that's why Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about what the messengers came with. So when the messengers came, they didn't just come with a political structure and a political system. They didn't just come with a social, you know, you can say system. No, they say they came with guidance. أَرْسَلَهُ بِالدِّينِ الْمَشْهُورِ وَالْعَلَمِ الْمَأْثُورِ. And he goes on to say, وَالضِّيَاءِ اللَّامِعِ, and an illuminating light. Why did he bring all of this? Why did he come with all of these things? Why did he do all of these things? إِزَاحَةً لِلشُّبُهَاتِ. The prophets, they came with this light, they came with this religion, with this flag of guidance. Why? So that they can remove, they can, extinguish these doubts that were there in the minds of the people.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam makes a very important claim. A very important claim in the sense that this claim thwarts all the ideas of various different thinkers and philosophers who claim that sociological changes, or who claim that the actual, you can say, issues that create any type of change in the society, that lead to a change in the system of the social structures, are the social economic circumstances of that place and that time. And that is what leads to other issues after that. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, no, all of these have a root cause, and those are the spiritual problems. And this is very important, because when Imam Ali alayhi salam says that the Prophet came with a religion, a very clear religion, with a flag that was pioneering, with a lamp that was enlightening, when he mentions all of these things, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, why does he bring all of these things? Why does the Prophet come with all of these things? إِزَاحَةً لِلشُّبَهَاتِ. He comes with these to extinguish doubts, to extinguish that state that people were in, whereby right and wrong was mixed, where truth and falsehood was amalgamated in a way that people could not distinguish between these, this mixture. And that's why they were confused. The community was in a state of problem with regards to their beliefs. And this is the source of all those problems. Their understanding was flawed. And people, for example, they started to believe that we need, for example, a dictator to rule us. They had forgotten that they actually need a spiritual guide to remove them from the darknesses that they were in. They don't just need a powerful dictatorial ruler who clobbers them and forces them to go in a direction that he himself wants. But it is the law of the one who created you that needs to be manifested in your life. So for example, this is one of the issues that the people faced, and the prophets came and they changed this way of understanding and these wrong ideas that were there in the minds of the people.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, coming back to our discussion, we say that the actual cause and root of the problems of the communities are that spiritual issues. They are spiritual in nature. They are not material in nature as such. Yes, material nature, the material problems are there, but their root are those spiritual issues. And I think this has been quite discussed lengthily, so it doesn't need to be repeated. What is important here is the focus that Imam Ali alayhi salam gives to this issue. He says, إِزَاحَةً لِلشُّبُهَاتِ. And then he says, وَاحْتِجَاجًا بِالْبَيِّنَاتِ. This religion that he brought and this light of guidance and all of that was brought in a state whereby this was bearing certain forms of arguments, very clear-cut arguments, very, very, you can say, apparent and clear arguments that could remove those people from that state of confusion. They didn't come with complicated philosophical arguments that would confuse people even further. They came with clear, simple, yet elegant, yet deep. Simple in the sense that everyone could understand. Deep in the sense that one who wanted to really understand deeper realities could go deeper and dig deeper into those words and understand the deeper understandings of those statements of wisdom. So this was there. It is the way the imams and the prophets and these guides, the way they presented those deep realities in simple terms and words and in very clear-cut arguments that was actually a point of attraction for people towards the right direction. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. As you know, on this program, we will address the most important issues in the South Asian region that affect the governments, organizations, communities, and most importantly, the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So stay tuned.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we will discuss the growing proximity between India and Israel and how Benjamin Netanyahu's comeback is being seen by Hindutva forces in India. And we shall also look at the liquefied natural gas crisis in Pakistan amid a rapid surge in global gas prices fueled by the simmering war in Ukraine.
Benjamin Netanyahu's comeback after the recently held Israeli regime elections has brought cheer to the Hindutva forces in India. Netanyahu, during his previous stint as the Israeli premier, had developed a close relationship with the Narendra Modi-led Bharatiya Janata Party government in New Delhi. Political observers believe Netanyahu's comeback augurs well for the India-Israel relations, which are likely to see an upward trajectory in military and economic spheres. And most importantly, Modi was amongst the first world leaders to congratulate the Zionist leader on his recent election success.
Narendra Modi, the leader of India's Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party, in July 2017 became the country's first prime minister to visit Tel Aviv, where he signed a series of agreements with his Israeli counterpart. After Netanyahu's ouster, ties between the two sides witnessed a slightly downward curve. Now, as the former premier is set to reclaim the chair, Hindutva hawks in New Delhi are rejoicing. Earlier this month, after Yair Lapid conceded defeat in the regime's general elections, Modi dialed Netanyahu and said he looked forward to deepening relations with Israel.
There is a long-standing history between the fascist Indian government, a Hindutva government right now in power at New Delhi, and the hardline government which has come into power now in the shape of Netanyahu in Israel, because, and you would definitely ask what those similarities are. Their similarities are very well known, historically established. That is the similarity between Palestine and Kashmir, because the both of the states have been cooperating in the past to control the population, the demographics of their respective regions under their occupations. And there is a common, phobia, that is Islamophobia, amongst both the leaders. So I do see this relationship further strengthening in the future as well.
Under Modi's leadership, India's military and economic ties with the regime in Tel Aviv have taken a new form and shape. The two sides signed a lucrative deal worth $2 billion in 2017 in what the Israeli officials termed the largest military deal in its history. Today, Israel contributes 40% of India's arms imports. More recently, Netanyahu used his personal rapport with world leaders, including Modi, to present himself as an international figure to Israeli voters and coalition allies. Pertinently, his new term in office coincides with the 30th anniversary of Indo-Israel diplomatic ties, which Modi has taken to newer heights in the past 8 years, adopting a different line from his predecessors.
It's a very interesting contrast, and at the same time, there you find similarity there as well. The father of this Hindutva concept, which is not a religious concept, but a political ideology, of a Hindu far right, I would say. The political forefathers of this ideology is Savarkar. He is, inspiration from Hitler. And right now, the concept of Zionism is based upon the domination of the racial domination of the Jews. That is, again, strangely enough, ironically enough, is influenced by the ideology of Hitler and by the ideology of the Nazi era. And now the contrast is the similarity in both Hinduism and the Hindutva and Zionism. That's how the irrespective of being in contrast with their origins, they are similar with each other. They draw inspiration from each other because both are working towards the subjugation of the Muslim population within their respective occupation. So that is why they draw the inspiration from each other right now at this particular time. And there are ground realities existing since last, one decade in particular. Israeli Zionist regime is helping out the Hindutva Indian regime in controlling the demography of Kashmir on the basis of a model they had implemented on Palestine.
India has developed close ties with Persian Gulf countries over the past few decades. But the growing proximity between Israeli regime and India, especially during the tenure of Narendra Modi, remains a matter of concern and threat. There is a growing opinion in the Persian Gulf region that Modi and Netanyahu must not be allowed to use their proximity to advance the common narrative of Islamophobia and fascism in the region. The threat has become more pronounced after the recent arrest of Indians working for the Israeli spy agency in Qatar.
India's growing influence in the Persian Gulf region and at the same time its closer ties with the Israeli regime has become both a matter of concern and threat. In recent weeks, reports have been doing rounds about the detention of 8 former Indian Navy officers in Qatar on charges of espionage and international terrorism at the behest of the Israeli regime. They were allegedly transferring data from a major Persian Gulf country to the Israeli regime and India, which reveals a deeply sinister collaboration between the two sides that boasts of similarly toxic political ideologies.
You see, there is a history of intelligence cooperation and defense cooperation between India and Israel. The Indians have been buying the gadgetry, in particular the radars and the intelligence equipment from the Israelis, software from the Israelis as well. They've been getting training from the Israelis as well, and in return, what they're providing them is the vast manpower they've got in the Middle East, and especially in the Gulf countries. They've not only have got simple manpower, but they